You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
Hi, I'm Andy Borowitz, in for Leonard Lopate on WNYC and WNYC.org. Sarah Gruen's 2006 novel Water for Elephants spent nearly 2 years on the New York Times bestseller list and was translated into 44 languages. Well, she's back with a new book that centers on animals, bonobos, the great apes who share 98.7% of their DNA with humans and are able to understand human language. Ape House is published by Spiegel and Grau. I want to welcome Sarah Gruen to Lopate House, as we call it here. Bonobos are amazing. I've seen them at the zoo. They are incredibly like us. Their mannerisms are so much like us. I want to talk all about bonobos and what you know about them. But first, I want to talk a little bit about Water for Elephants and what kind of challenge that presented you for writing a follow-up to that. You'd written a couple of novels before Water for Elephants. Isn't that right?
Yes. I had two novels before that, and the first one was a moderate success. And by that, I mean nobody actually cared what I was doing for the next year and a half, and what I was doing was writing Water for Elephants. Mm-hmm. And so that is really the difference between writing Ape House and writing Water for Elephants, is that people were aware of what I was doing and waiting for me to hand it in.
And wait and say, what's next? What's next, yeah. Sarah? What's taking you so long? Did it, when as a writer, it's of course every writer dreams of having a big success, and it's a great thing, but was it also a little intimidating? Were you thinking, oh man, all those people, 44 languages, reading Water for Elephants, they're going to expect something like Water for Elephants, not like Water for Elephants? Was it sort of this little thing on your shoulder the whole time? Or?
Oh, absolutely. I'm sure that there were some people who wanted Water for Elephants Part 2.
3D.
Yeah, exactly.
How did you deal with that? You just sort of said, well, forget about it. I'm going to do something completely different.
I did actually have to do exactly that. I had to get unaware of the audience. I had to get unaware of the fact that people were out there that were going to read the book and just get back into my little zone and slip into my fiction world every day and be unaware of this world.
Did you have – I'm always curious to know how other writers do their thing. Did you have any kind of rituals that would help you with that, or did you just kind of have to sit down at the desk and say, okay, we're putting the audience in a little box and – and here we go.
No, I do have a little ritual, and it involves...
Can you share it with us?
Yeah. It's probably a little weird, but I go into my office, and I turn it into a sensory deprivation pod and pull all the curtains, and I get under a quilt with my laptop, and I open my file, and I stare at it, and I rework what I wrote the day before mm-hmm. until I'm ready to move forward, and that takes approximately an hour and a half. And once I'm there, I feel like I've stepped out of this world and into the fictional world, and as strange as it sounds, I feel like I'm recording rather than creating. But if the phone rings or if someone comes to the door and I have to talk to a real person, then I'm yanked out of that world again. And I have to go through that hour and a half again. And there are only so many hour and a halves in a day. So I've been known to hide behind the curtains from the mailman and things like that.
That's a good idea. And do you turn off your internet connection to make sure that you're not?
Yeah, I put myself on Freedom, which is a piece of software where if you run a Mac, you can lock yourself out of the internet.
Freedom.
Yeah.
That's interesting. That's an ironic name for that.
It's program. It's a great program.
Freedom. Okay. Well, Nat, thanks for all those tips. Now, what got you? First of all, the book is tremendously fun. It looked like you were having a lot of fun writing it because it's got a lot in it. It's sort of like you've introduced a lot of characters and you're having just a great sort of it's a rollicking novel. What first got you interested in bonobos? How did you wind up focusing on them?
My mother sent me an email that contained a link to the Great Ape Trust website, and I went and looked around, and I was fascinated both by the fact that they were language competent apes, and I've been following Coco the gorilla and various mm-hmm. other language studies in apes for, well, more years than I want to admit to. But I also hadn't heard of bonobos before, and they're really amazing, and I was fascinated by that, and the more I learned about them, the more I wanted to write about them.
I think there was a nice piece maybe 3 summers ago in The New Yorker about bonobos that somebody wrote, which was fascinating. It talked about their interesting social structure and
yes.
sexual structure and all that. Do you want to talk a little bit about what's sexy about bonobos?
Sure. Well, you know, they are the most recently discovered great ape, and for many years they were thought of as a subspecies of chimpanzee.
Right. When were they discovered?
Well, they were given their own specieshood in 1928, I believe. Mm-hmm. But the more you look at them and their culture, they are very different from chimpanzees. They are matriarchal, egalitarian, peaceful, and extremely, extremely amorous.
Okay, well, we'll leave it at that. I guess now that we've kind of captured everybody's interest with that. So how did you go about learning more about them and observing bonobos?
Well, I really wanted. It's okay.
Everyone makes that mistake.
No, it's actually not a mistake if you live in England. So
I have heard it both ways. I had to go to the Merriam-Webster website to find it. Then they shouted at me, bonobos. So I guess that's the American. That's our American version. Yeah. How did you observe them?
I contacted the Great Ape Trust and I asked them if I could come visit, and they said, sure, as long as you do this. And this was an enormous pile of books that I had to read. And I also flew to York University in Toronto and spent some time with the linguists there who were working with the data from the trust. And it was a pretty long list of homework. Mm-hmm. But once I did that, then I was invited to the trust, which didn't necessarily mean I got to meet the apes, because that was up to the apes.
I'm Andy Borowitz, sitting in for Leonard Lopate. I'm talking to Sarah Gruen about her new novel, Ape House, WNYC, and WNYC.org. Now, wait a minute. It was up to the bonobos as to whether or not you got to hang out with bonobos. How do they make that determination?
Well, it's their house. You know, these aren't zoo exhibits. That's where they live.
So what does the house look like?
It's a great place for bonobos. It's got towers that they can climb in. It's got bedrooms for them. Pampanisha has her own kitchen. There's a salon with the TV and their movies. And it's just designed for them. But they say yes or no. You can come in through their lexigram board, which is how they communicate with humans. And it's got almost 400 symbols on it, so they're really able to communicate very well.
So that's incredibly sophisticated. That's not they're not just saying, you know, me Coco sad or something like that. They're really talking.
It actually has tenses on it, which I was not expecting.
Really?
Yeah.
How were bonobos first trained to communicate with us? How did that come about?
Well, it's the studies started in the same way that most of the other language studies have been done, which is to say that they sit an ape down and try to teach it language. The ape that started all this was Matata, and she lived the first 8 years of her life in the jungle. And they spent 2 or 2.5 years trying to teach her lexigrams, and it was really kind of a failure. She learned a handful at most. And when they took her away to get pregnant again, the infant, who had been clinging to her head and her shoulders all the time through these lessons, realized that his mother was gone and that he had to communicate and barter for himself, and turned out to be completely fluent in all of these things that he had just picked up by being in the presence of this. And so the language studies going on at the Trust now are based on acquisition of language in the same manner as human infants. You expose them to language early during the language window, and then they communicate through a desire to communicate.
Now, when you described the ape house that you saw, it's their house, and they sort of hang out there, it does sound a little bit like the Big Brother house, I guess, in reality TV. And was this the inspiration of your book? Was it hanging out with them and saying, well, wait a minute, this is an awful lot like reality TV? Is that how you came to it? Because that's a crucial aspect of the novel Ape House.
Yeah, the reality TV part was part of the theme of tabloid journalism and the instant gratification of Facebook and Twitter and celebrity blogs and all of that stuff. So, no, the bonobos house did not inspire me, but it did lead to all sorts of possibilities. And Big Brother was one thing, but then Jersey Shore absolutely exceeded all my expectations.
So let's talk a little bit about the story of your book, because we've been sort of alluding to it. Give us sort of a thumbnail description of what happens in Ape House. You don't have to give us any spoilers, but what's it about?
That's always a hard question to ask authors, because they never know when to stop. But
I'll do that for you.
It starts out with the bonobos living very happily in a language lab that is similar to the trust, and a explosion rocks their world and grievously injures their main caretaker. And they disappear. They are kidnapped and they disappear. They go off the map for a few months. Meanwhile, there is another character, a reporter, whose wife is a struggling novelist. And this is his story. And he, one of the things about the tabloid journalism is that it's killing legitimate media. And so this man is suffers humiliation after humiliation in his real newspaper job until he finally quits in despair. But he's so desperate to keep the story that he moves to the worst of the worst of the tabloids.
Mm-hmm. And how do the bonobos wind up in the world of reality TV? And I guess once we're talking about Jersey Shore, it doesn't really seem like a tremendous stretch. It's a very cheap shot, but on my part. But although you did bring up Jersey Shore first, come on.
I know.
If the situation is listening, you have only Sarah Gruen to blame here. They wind up on TV.
They do. There's a mystery meat campaign. So there's billboards that are counting backward, and they show a specific station that people should tune to on a certain time. And when it happens, it's the bonobos, and they've been put in a house that is absolutely empty except for containing cameras that can capture everything from every room, and a computer and unlimited credit so that they can use the computer to order anything they want.
Well, it sounds like a show I would watch, I guess. I mean, I guess I watch a lot of things of that nature, so it wouldn't be a real departure for me. How do you put this together? Are you fascinated by what's going on in our culture, and then you're looking for a story to comment on that, or are you a storyteller first and foremost? And as you're writing, themes emerge. How do you work backwards from a theme, or do you just tell a story and then see what it's about as you write it?
I think it's a combination, but I definitely don't work backward from a theme. Mm-hmm. I definitely will work one in if there's an opportunity. But no, I just start writing. I start from page one and I go right to the end, and then I go back and try to make something readable out of my terrible draft.
And did you have fun? It looked like fun. Was this one fun to do?
Or? I was having a lot of fun, yeah.
Well, it's a fun read. I've been speaking with Sarah Gruen about her novel Ape House, published by Spiegel & Grau. And she will be reading and signing books tonight at 7 at the Union Square Barnes & Noble. Sarah, thanks for hanging out with us.
Thank you for having me.